On episode 386 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Tal Ben-Shahar and discuss his book, Shortcuts to Happiness. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/386. Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go. Hello, I am so glad to have you back here for another episode of 40 Plus Fitness Podcast. Today, we're going to interview a very, very cool guy. I know you're going to enjoy this interview quite a bit because we're going to talk about happiness. And as you probably know, if you've listened to this podcast for a while, I've recently moved down to Panama. And so I've been kind of going through a staged move. We came back to the States a couple weeks ago and moved out some things out of our house to make it a little easier to facilitate moving and closing when someone does actually make an offer. But it's also been a pretty stressful few weeks in trying to get that done, get our dog down here to Panama, which was an ordeal in and of itself, and to go ahead and sign the contract and buy Island Fitness here in Bocas del Toro. So I now am a proud gym owner of Island Fitness in Bocas del Toro. So if you find yourself down in Bocas, please do come by and drop in for a workout. I'd love to meet you. But again, that's been a very, very stressful time. So I'm really glad to go back and reflect on that with this renewed look at what we're talking about today. If there's anything I can do to help you, though, I do really want to help you reach your health and fitness goals. It goes well beyond what we do here at the podcast. I'm all in for helping you find wellness, and I'm offering you a free 15-minute consult. No obligation, just a free phone call. We get on a conference call line, and we talk for about 15 minutes about the things that matter most to you and your wellness. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/15min. That's 15 men or 15 men, M-I-N. So go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/15min and you can book your free 15-minute consult. That link actually just takes you directly to my calendar. So you can just set up the link, nothing else to do, get on the phone with me and I can try to help you reach your health and fitness goals this summer. So our guest today is a really, really cool guy. He is a Harvard professor. He went to Harvard, and he teaches on positive mental attitude and happiness. So really great topic. I'm really glad to have him here. With no further ado, here is Tal Ben-Shahar. And Tal, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Your book is called Shortcuts to Happiness, Life-Changing Lessons from My Barber. And your barber's name is Abby. I think I'm pronouncing that right, but it was really cool to kind of go through these stories that, you know, over the course of 2 years, I shaved my head. So I haven't been to a barber in over 20 years or so. It was like, I think the last time I went to a barber, and I didn't have one that was nearly as cool as yours.
Yeah. Well, you know, I must say that during those 2 years, I had a much shorter haircut than usual, and not just me, also my boys. So I took them more often than necessary to the barber.
I get it. I get it. It sounds it sounded like a really cool place that it's, you know, sometimes you just popped in just to hang out. It was really kind of that cool of a place.
Yeah, you know, in many ways it was. I saw it as an island of sanity. You know, in our crazy busy world, you know, where things are up in the air and everything is virtual. You know, here was something real, authentic, simple and wise.
Yeah. Well, my wife and I, we moved to Panama not long ago to try to find exactly what you're talking about. We literally are on an island. And yesterday we went to this this farm. It's an organic farm. They do cocoa and coconuts and all of that. So he taught us all about, walked us all over his property. It's really cool to just kind of, I guess I say disconnect, but it really was reconnect because I spend more time online, I think, than I do offline, and that's really kind of a sad statement, but I do appreciate that you had that opportunity to, and probably still do, to hang out with Avi and learn even probably more than
probably a second book coming, I guess is the best way for me to say it.
There's a sequel. Yes. Okay. I'm actually hoping that other people will write sequels, because I think maybe one of the most important lessons I learned is that wisdom is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. For 25 years, I've been in academia, you know, I still am. And the primary source for me was academic research, ancient wisdom, you know, from the great thinkers, from Plato, Aristotle, Lao Tzu, and Confucius. And here suddenly, once I opened my eyes or ears, I realized the deep wisdom that was just literally in my neighborhood.
And that's what I thought was so cool is, one of the things you did in the book, and I'll have to look it up here real quick, because I actually, as soon as I read that chapter, I pulled down the book. It's a fiction book. It's called The Schopenhauer Cure.
Yes, by Irvin Yalom.
Okay, I've downloaded that book. That's now on my reading list for the next one, because I just thought it was really cool that you were looking and tying these things together, from the conversations that you're having with your barber to a book you may have read somewhere else, even if it was a novel, and just kind of like you said, it's just this birth of wisdom that you're getting in your local environment.
Yes, and what I realized is that the minute I decided to write that book, and it happened when I was having my haircut, I was not having a good day. But I, you know, went for the haircut. 20 minutes later, I come out not just looking better, but also feeling better. And that's the moment I said, I have to write a book about this guy, because I wasn't the only one having these experiences under his scissors and tutelage. And the minute I decided to write this book, suddenly almost this whole world opened up. And every time I went to have a haircut or took my kids to have a haircut, there were more and more pearls of wisdom. It's just about having, opening our eyes, opening our ears to the opportunities.
And that was what, again, like I said, really cool, because the book opened my eyes to a few things that that I guess I knew. I think, like you said, a lot of this stuff is there. It's just sometimes it gets buried in us. And one of the first topics that I kind of want to get into, because as soon as I read it, I was like, oh, that's it, was your chapter on posture. And the impact it has on us psychologically if we're not in a good posture.
Yeah, the connection between mind and body. And in the West, primarily, we don't recognize this connection. And I thought about it when I was, or rather when my kid was having a haircut, and I saw how Avi essentially, straightened Eliav's back, and suddenly his posture changed. And I could see that psychologically he changed as well. And as soon as he did that, I thought to all the research out there on the importance of posture, showing that, for example, people who walk briskly with their shoulders back and hands swinging are happier. Also, if they just fake it. In other words, if you fake walking this way, even if you don't feel that way, you start walking this way, you actually start to feel better. Or if you put on a smile, a happy face, even if you initially fake it, you become it over time. So it's the connection between our postures and our psychological state, our external state and our internal state.
Yeah, since we traveled to Panama, I haven't had a chance to move my studio stuff down. And I have this adjustable desk, and I've been in this apartment that we rented. It's near town. It's perfectly located for us to learn where things are, but I'm literally sitting at a kitchen counter on a chair, and I just realized as I was reading the book, because it was on my computer as well, is I was all hunched down, and I closed and leaning forward, and I was like, let's try this. I get up and I actually walked to the store, and when I got back, it's like I had drank a pot of coffee. I felt so much better. I had so much more energy. Mm-hmm. And so I think just kind of taking that moment when we realize, hey, I'm not open, I'm closed, and I need to open myself up. I think there's a lot of joy, a lot of happiness and positive vibes that are going to come out of just kind of realizing the body is connected to the mind and vice versa. And they both can be used as tools to help the other.
Exactly. So the fact that it's a loop between them, and a loop, a circular relationship, a cycle, means that we can start anywhere. We can start by changing our mind. We can start by changing our our posture. Now, the interesting thing is that there is another loop, not an internal loop, but an external loop. In other words, if you walk to the store, slouched, looking down, you're unlikely to have interactions with others. Whether when you open yourself up physically, then others are much more likely to respond to you in the same way, which of course will lead to an upward spiral.
Yeah, I know my career as an intern, when I was an internal auditor, I tended to have more of a, like you said, a closed posture at work, and that affected my relationship with everybody at work. You know, they saw me as this scary guy. And even though we were on the same team, working for the same company, it did put off that vibe that I was unapproachable. And it's sometimes difficult for me offline now, you know, just dealing day to day with just normal people to have the right vibe. And so I do need to keep myself cognizant of how I'm projecting.
Yeah. And, you know, as you were talking, I'm thinking of something else regarding our life in the office. You know, we spend a lot of time in the in our offices sitting down, and it's very unhealthy to spend all these hours. Even if we are sitting up, in a positive, open posture, just being static, being sedentary is unhealthy. There are doctors who actually are talking today about sitting as the new smoking. Now, I think they are exaggerating, but not much. Meaning there's a lot of research showing just how bad sitting for, 8 hours, 10 hours a day is for us. And the suggestion is, the rule of thumb is, every half hour, get up for, even if it's 10, 20 seconds, get up and move around and then go back to sit. This will have an impact both on your psychological well-being as well as your physical well-being.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that follow this thing called Pomodoro. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay. It's basically where you have a work task and you're going to be sitting there doing this work task. You set your clock for 25 minutes and you just focus on that one task for your 25 minutes. And when the 25 minutes is up, you now have a 5 minute break to get up, move around, to not think about that project, to stare at blue sky, to do anything that would give you some moment of rest, some moment of refreshment, and then you can go back for another 25 minutes. And they've found scientifically that people are a lot more effective, a lot more productive following that method.
Yes, I can certainly see why that happens. And again, the impact is both psychological and physiological.
There's another important loop that you talk about in the book that I think a lot of us forget. And it reminded me of, when you read books like The Blue Zones and things like that about how people are living longer and happier and healthier lives, it's about being connected. It's like being part of the whole.
Yeah. Number one predictor of happiness is relationships. There's a wonderful study conducted at Harvard. It started almost a century ago. It followed Harvard students as well as people from the community around Cambridge, Massachusetts, followed them for over 75 years. And what was found, at the end of the 75 years, after collecting quite literally millions of data points, what was found was that there was one major predictor of both health, physical health, and happiness, psychological health. And that was relationships. Now, the interesting thing about relationships was that it didn't matter what kind of relationships, meaning some people had romantic relationships that they enjoyed for decades. Others had very close family ties. Others had very close intimate friends, professional relationships. It didn't matter. But people who had close, intimate, real, genuine relationships were both happier as well as healthier. The best predictor. Now, today, and you alluded to this earlier, today we're losing this connection because real relationships are being substituted by virtual relationships. And unfortunately, 1,000 friends on social media are no substitute for that one, best friend, that one or two intimate relationships.
Yeah, it's a 400 square foot apartment right now. So my wife and I have been spending a lot of intimate time together. And, at first I thought when we first got here, I'm like, we're going to be fighting all the time. And I'll say there's been some, some moments, little flare ups here and there. But really, I feel much more connected to her, to the world, just having this opportunity to have this time with her.
Yes, I can absolutely see that. The other thing, though, is also, you know, in the best of relationships, whether it's the romantic relationships, whether it's friendships, there are disputes, there are disagreements. You know, there are no sterile or perfect relationships. In fact, a very important part of a healthy long-term relationship is dealing with conflict disputes.
Well, when you're in a one little bedroom place together, there's a few here and there, but it's been pretty awesome. There's another chapter you had in here that one of the things you said about the book that I think is important is these lessons are not something you just read through one time and say, oh, okay, I got it, and I'm going to follow this. You go back to these. I think these are some great lessons for you. Just have this book nearby. And when you feel, okay, I'm angry or I'm not connected or I'm not happy, flip through the table of contents. I went through kind of an episode earlier this week and I got angry. I just, you know, and so I found myself just very angry at this event. And I went back actually, because I had read this chapter before, I went back and read it again. And so that's on anger management. And I have to say, it did help me kind of put this all back into perspective. And I'm not going to say I've perfectly managed that situation, but it is past me now. And so can you talk a little bit about how we can approach anger?
Sure. So, you know, if I can tell the background behind that chapter, which was a real fun chapter to write. So, you know, I was having my haircut and this woman just storms into the barber shop, all angry and upset. And Avi asks her, you know, so what's up? And she says, well, you know, this, and then she used an expletive, this guy, you know, cuts me off. How dare he? And so on and so on. And Avi says to her, you know, I have a method of dealing with this kind of behavior on other people's part. And she says, what? And, you know, we both actually thought, you know, he said, I beat him up because, you know, Avi's a strong guy. but no, he takes another route. And what he says is that if he's, let's say, waiting for a parking spot and, you know, the parking spot frees up and he's been waiting. And as soon as he tries to go in with the car, an SUV cuts him off. And then he said to us, he said, what I imagine then is that a cow cut me off. And, you know, both of us, you know, just laugh and say, a cow? And he says, exactly. Because when you're thinking of a cow, you laugh and then you're not angry. And, you know, he was actually basically talking about some very interesting research that has been conducted over the last 50 years on emotions. And the basic idea here is that you cannot experience two emotions simultaneously. For example, especially if there are opposite emotions, such as amusement, a cow is cutting me off, and anger, an SUV cut me off, or empathy and anger. And therefore, introducing some humor into the mix actually shifts our mindset as well as a heart set away from anger. And I must say, I've been using this very often, not just when, you know, when people cut me off on the road, but in other occasions, you know, imagining something funny when I tend to be angry or upset. It's very simple. It's, you know, it's even silly, but it's the silliness of it that makes it so effective.
And that's what I kind of liked about it, was it's something internal that you can control. You know, if you recognize that you're having an emotion and that emotion is not the frame of mind that you want to be in, it's not your ideal state, you have this tool, click, and you internalize the humor, have a little chuckle, and then move on about your day. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I think the thing that you're pointing to is the idea of choice. I have a choice. I have a choice whether to focus on a big evil SUV, yeah, or a funny cute cow.
Yeah. In my case, it's a person that revokes a contract that I thought was going to be good for us, and then boom, it's gone. And I'm like, okay. And I'm, you know, powerless. So there was a bit of anger. And then I'm kind of like, well, you know, how would I feel if that was a penguin, you know, that decided to poop on the contract, you know? it is what it is, you know, a monkey pees on you here in the, you know, in the jungle, and you just keep going, you know, you don't get angry at the monkey.
right.
You know, the choice part of it is also, I think, kind of a critical aspect to this whole management of happiness, or trying to find happiness. And I wouldn't say so much that you call it shortcuts. None of these are really shortcuts, but they are the most direct path. And sometimes getting somewhere that you want to get is not about going fast. It's actually about slowing down.
Yeah, I think this is such an important tip or shortcut, you call it, in especially in our modern life when things are so fast, when there is a constant flux of information and noise and happenings. And you know, you move to Panama. I'm assuming at least in part to slow down this frantic pace
significantly.
And the question is, how can we deal with the frantic pace? And one way is to just move away, retire, get away from it all. The other approach is to find, again, what I said at the beginning, to find islands of sanity in this crazy busy world. And island of sanity can be going out with a dear friend to dinner and switching your phone off and not being available and really being there with that person, or going for a walk, once again, without technology, or meditating. But it's these small breaks that can make a very big difference. You know, one of the things that I talk about a lot is dealing with stress. And, you know, stress is it's not even an epidemic in the US, it's a pandemic. It's a worldwide phenomenon that even Australians are suffering from excessive stress. And the question is, what do you do with the stress? So, one way to think about it, you say, okay, I want to eliminate it. I don't want stress in my life. The other way to think about it, which is actually a better, healthier way to think about it, is the stress in and of itself is not bad. I go to the gym and I lift weights. What am I doing to my muscles? I stress my muscles. Not a bad thing. I actually get stronger as a result, unless I don't take recovery. You know, if I just lift weights and more weights and more weights, then this stress mounts and I get injured. In the same way in life, it's okay to experience stress as long as there are also periods of recovery. And so we need to punctuate our crazy busy lives with recovery, whether it's recovery, as I said, in terms of that meal with a friend or a good night's sleep or a day off at least once a week.
Yeah, that is so important. And I think it is hard in today's society to actually like turn off, to leave your phone off, to take a day off, because you kind of feel like something's leaving you. You're losing something. There's this fear you're going to miss out on something. And so it is this, to me, this one might be the hardest thing to really kind of wrap your mind around, is that if you don't recover, then the stress is not good for you. And it's like you said,
that's when burnout happens. That's when injury happens. It is bad for you. And the thing is that, as you said, it's not easy to disconnect. And the reason why it's so hard is because most people in developed countries are addicted, literally addicted to technology. You know, last week I was giving a lecture somewhere in Latin America, and the audience were partners in that particular firm, so very senior people, and their spouses. So there were 400 couples there. And I said to them, look, I have a question for you. I don't want you to answer it aloud, just in your mind's eye. Just think about the answer. And my question was, in the morning when you wake up, first thing, you open your eyes. Who do you turn to? And then, you know, there are chuckles in the room. And I said, do you turn to your lovely husband, wife, partner, or do you turn the other way? And it was a rhetorical question. I mean, obviously, most people turn to the phone first thing when they open their eyes in the morning. Now, I said to them earlier, I said, look, this is an addiction like any other addiction. Now, imagine if you're an alcoholic, would you have a bottle of tequila right next to you in bed as you open your eyes? Of course not. Why do we have our phone right next to us when we go to sleep?
Well, I know one answer I always get when I talk to folks about this, because I typically won't have my phone right by the bed. I've been fortunate enough to know that that's not what I want. But they use their phone for their alarm. They use their phone for a lot of other things. And so that's what makes it so hard, is that you see this as this valuable tool, but it's also a problem.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I hear you. And about a year ago, I actually bought myself an old-fashioned watch with an alarm clock specifically for that. But I don't need to put the phone next to me.
Perfect. All right. So, Tal, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
Mm. So, you know, the first thing is that we need to allow in unhappiness so that we can fulfill our potential for happiness. You know, there's a common misconception that a happy life is a life which is devoid of painful emotions. But in fact, there are only two kinds of people who don't experience painful emotions, such as sadness or anger or frustration or anxiety or envy. Two kinds of people who don't experience these painful emotions, and they are the psychopaths and dead people. And so experiencing these painful emotions, it's actually a good sign. It means we're not a psychopath and we're alive. The problem in today's world is that, especially given social media, where we see others who seem to be happy all the time, we think there is something wrong with us when we experience painful emotions and we reject them. And when we reject painful emotions, they only intensify. Moreover, when we reject painful emotions, we're also inadvertently rejecting the pleasurable emotions. So the first step is accepting painful emotions. And by the way, this applies to our mental health as well as to our physical health. Suppressing, repressing, rejecting emotions is essentially a prescription for not only unhappiness, it's a prescription for illness. So that's one thing. The second thing, physical exercise. So much research on physical exercise and its importance, once again, not just for physical well-being, for psychological well-being. More and more psychologists are talking about physical exercise as the wonder drug. So as little as 30 minutes three times a week and punctuate your day-to-day with ongoing movement, you know, that's enough, or I should say that's the minimum we need to sustain mental health. And then, of course, I mentioned relationships as the number one predictor of happiness, putting time aside. It's also the number one predictor of physical health. And finally, gratitude. You know, Oprah was right. An attitude of gratitude does contribute to health and happiness.
I completely agree. Those are really cool. Thank you for sharing. If someone wanted to learn more about you, learn more about your book, Shortcuts to Happiness, where would you like for me to send them?
Well, on my website, which is talbenshahar.com, there is access to my books, also to my own online programs that are offered through the Happiness Studies Academy. So I'd love people to visit and join.
Okay. Well, you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/386, and I'll be sure to have the link there. So Tal, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much.
Hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, would you please consider becoming a supporter of the podcast? It's pretty easy. You go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/Patreon, and that's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and that will take you to a website where you can actually contribute to the show. There's different access levels that you have, so you can get some additional goodies on top of just being mentioned in the show notes or something like that. But even $1 an episode, you know, it's not asking a lot, I don't think. But I really would appreciate your support if you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/Patreon and become a patron of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast. Thank you. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Jennifer Carroll and discuss her book, Beyond Invincible. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.